National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Catholics and contraception. Now, that's a topic fraught with controversy ever since the sexual revolution of the 1960s. 50 years ago this month, Pope Paul VI confirmed the Church's teaching on contraception. How does that affect us today? Joining me, Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio, to discuss this anniversary of Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, is moral theologian Christian Brueger and author Terry Polakovic, and of course, Matthew Bunsen, the senior editor at the Register, and my faithful co-host is also with us. Matthew, you know, you are awaiting the publication of a new book that's very close to the topic of Humanae Vitae. It's a book on Paul VI.
It is, yeah. It's a look at his pontificate, but especially a compilation of his writings and his sayings. And the more you read about Paul VI, the more you realize what a true prophet he was for our own time.
And when should we look forward to that book?
That'll be out in time for the canonization. Of course, that's on October 14th.
All right, more to come on that then. Our guest this week contributed to the Register's July 26th print edition honoring Humanae Vitae. It was kind of an anniversary edition, and that should be in subscribers' homes as we speak, really. And over the next couple of weeks, we'll be talking about that edition and basically the encyclical, how it came to be, how it was received, and where we are today. But right now, we're joined by Dr. Christian Brueger. Christian is a senior fellow of ethics and the director of the fellows program at the Culture of Life Foundation, which is in Washington, D.C. And he recently wrote a piece for the Register. He's been writing a lot for us lately, which we're very grateful. But the piece in the anniversary edition is The Bitter Pill of Dissent. Welcome, Dr. Christian Brueger.
Thank you, Jeanette. I'm happy to be here with you.
We've got a lot to talk about because your piece was really jam-packed and there's so much to talk about on this topic. So let me just jump right in and talk about this important question that you ask at the start of the piece and answer it for us. Why did so many Catholics succumb so quickly to the specious promise of artificial birth control? That was your question, and you attempt to answer it.
Yeah, and the attempt, I'm sure, is inadequate, but what I tried to do was show how the social factors that were going on in the world, the whole world, at least the whole world in which the Catholic Church was awake to, which would have primarily been Europe and North America, the whole world had effectively accepted the contraception promises, and the Catholic Church still stood in the way of, of international population programs being exported, and of, at a popular level, individuals being comfortable with the new pill, and so there were a lot of efforts in the late 50s and in the early 60s to sway Catholic opinion. They both were in the church and outside the church. And there are too many to itemize, but sure. When the story is told in a coherent way, one can see that the odds were stacked greatly against the church and any success in the teaching that Paul VI was going to deliver. So it's a sad story, but it's one that's our history.
You know, one area of your commentary, which was on the front page of our print edition, was really the development of contraception itself. So the pill, and how that played into the controversy within the church. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, sure. The pill really didn't get a life until the early 1960s. Steroid hormones weren't even first isolated until the early 1930s. And they were found relatively quickly to be effective in inhibiting ovulation, and so those who were associated with the new contraceptive movements, those who would have been allied to Margaret Sanger and her American Birth Control League, started to fund scientific research into how these new steroids could be therapeutically devised in order to be used as contraceptive pills. And right before the council in fall of 1962, the FDA approved the first steroid hormone for contraceptive use. Actually, no, that was 1960. I'm sorry for that. So it was on the minds of the council fathers, this new pill. And although in John the 23rd's mind, and I'm convinced in Paul the 6th's mind, the question as to whether contracepting one's intercourse was licit, I think in both their minds the answer was very clearly no. However, there was some question as to whether this new steroid hormone was in fact, morally speaking, contraceptive, because it could be taken before intercourse. It didn't impose a kind of a physical barrier between the couple, and so there was some question, because it was a new device, as to whether it should be included under the moral condemnation of contraception. Mm-hmm. And I think John the 23rd was uncertain, and Paul the 6th was uncertain at first. Eventually, it became very clear to them that it was contraceptive, and Paul the 6th, in his famous definition in Humanae Vitae in paragraph 14, makes it clear that he includes the pill when he says that contraception includes any act, whether before, during, or after sexual intercourse, that's specifically intended to render it non-procreative. So any act before intercourse, meaning the taking of a pill.
Right.
So there were questions in people's minds about it, but those questions were not really what fueled the contraceptive revolution within the church. That's another story.
Yeah, well, Christian, you note very powerfully here that the Pew Research Center reports that in 2016 that 87% of Catholics who attend Mass at least weekly believe using contraception is acceptable, which is one of your ways of framing what you also argue is that for a very long time now in the church, we have had not just dissent, but a kind of de facto schism from something that is a de fide doctrine. How did we get there?
That's the other story, huh? We're asking you to go there.
Yeah, well, the story is, and this is my own opinion, that I believe that good Catholics, for most of Catholic history, accepted the more difficult teachings of Catholic morality, not the big ones like don't murder or don't commit adultery, but the more difficult ones like don't even lie when great benefits can be accrued to you, and don't contraceptive intercourse, even if you have good reasons to avoid having children. I think they were obedient because they accepted the church as a rightful authority, and the church taught it, and to be a good Catholic, you conform your acts to what the church teaches. That's called legalism. I don't think it's a sin. I think it's okay. Many, many people today are legalistic. Many of the seminarians I teach were taught in Denver in the past decade. Had strong tendencies towards legalism. You know, the church teaches, that settles it, and let's move on to the next issue.
Right.
But they didn't understand why, when you choose sexual intercourse and you simultaneously choose to render that intercourse sterile, why it's bad for you. They couldn't see it. And when the Western world started revolting against authority, all kinds of authority, religious authorities, parental authority, moral authorities, traditional authorities, they started saying, you know, hell no, we won't go.
Right.
And at that point, rather than their presumption being obedience, which I think for decent people, obedience was the presumption for most of history, for good people. After that, the presumption for most decent people became question authority, doubt it. And at that point, they started saying, hey, this doesn't make sense to me. Authority is just pushing this down my throat. Any of us who have family members who were adults in 1968, I was a little boy in 1968, but I have family members and I have in-laws, and when they tell me their story, many of them were very devout. They were certainly Sunday churchgoers, and many of them went to daily mass. They were they were Eucharistic ministers, but they ended up falling on the dissenting side of the conversation because they were swept up in this, we don't understand why we should be doing this. It's causing us very significant consequences. We can't afford large families. Our mental health is being affected. Our social relations are being affected. Why should we do this? And then they had loud and authoritative voices inside the church saying it was okay.
Right.
Dissenting bishops, dissenting priests. And so we lost the hearts and minds of the Catholic faithful, I would say, between 1967 and the year running up to Humanae Vitae's publication. By 1970, we had lost the hearts and minds of the faithful. A few pastoral blunders came from the Vatican, so if we had it to do over again, we would. But most of them came with the bitter dissent of priests and bishops who just didn't support the Pope when the document was published.
You know, these minutes of this segment have gone by so fast, so we're really at the end. And I did want to say that in your piece, in your commentary, you leave off on what Catholics can do. And I think you kind of segued it at the beginning of the answer to that last question is, what can we Catholics do today to understand better this teaching? What can we do? And you really answer that with understanding the core of this teaching, that it isn't just legalism, that it has a depth and it has a beauty, which I think John Paul II tried to explain in Theology of the Body and many of his teachings. And that's where we can turn. Yeah. To really help ourselves understand that this isn't simply something we accept with a certain amount of just pure obedience. We can take this in and accept it in our hearts and in our minds and watch that it is beautiful. Christian, I hate that we're all out of time, so we'll have to have you back on to talk more about what is happening today on this important topic. But in the meantime, thank you so much for writing for the Register consistently and for writing this piece, The Bitter Pill of Dissent.
You're welcome, Jeanette.
When we come back, we'll talk to Register contributor Terry Polakovic about her own experience with the wisdom of papal teaching. This is Register Radio here on EWTN.
Here's today's quote from Mother Angelica's perpetual calendar. I must try to keep my soul quiet in order to hear the voice of the Spirit as He guides me along the path of holiness. Mother's spiral-bound perpetual calendar features an inspirational message for each day of the year. It's available from the EWTN Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Marcus Groda.
I believe EWTN's National Catholic Register is unique from other newspapers in that it not only is committed to reporting the news from the world and the church and our faith, but it does so through the lens of the faithfulness of our Catholic Church.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner or call 1-800-421-3230.
Have you heard about Church Pop? Church Pop features new online Christian content that's fun and inspiring every day. Find it on Snapchat, Instagram, and on the web at churchpop.com.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. And as usual, I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host and the senior editor at the Register. And as a part of our coverage of the 50th anniversary of Humani Vitae, we have with us Terry Polakovic, who wrote a compelling commentary about her own experience with this encyclical and its teaching on contraception. Terry is the co-founder of Endow, which is an organization dedicated to educating women on their true nature and dignity. And she served as that organization's president from 2003 to 2015. But there's something really exciting to me that Terry has done recently, and that is she has written a book that was newly released last month. It's called Life and Love, Opening Your Heart to God's Design. So, Terry, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you. I'm just excited to be talking with you. And is Matthew on?
Matthew's with us. He is.
It's good to be with you.
Oh, well... Well, thank you, and I just want to tell you, I'm such a big fan of yours. I read your stuff because I find it so interesting. So,
well, you
happy
have
to be talking with you also.
Indeed.
I appreciate it.
You have a lot in common because, you know, Matthew is obviously a church historian, and you just spent a year working on a piece of history, which is what set up, basically, what set up Humani Vitae in terms of the church's teaching immediately before and then, of course, after, to just keep that teaching whole and showing it as a part of the long history of the church. So that's the nature. That's your book. That's basically what you just wrote. So tell me first, what were some of your aha moments as you researched for the book Life and Love?
Well, as you say, kind of a history of the documents, the church documents that deal with this particular subject leading up to Humani Vitae and then after Humani Vitae. And in the book, what I do is I take portions of the document and I relate them to what's happening in the culture at the time of the time that the document was written. And then I also get into the popes, a little bit. I dive into who the Pope was at the time and what type of man he was and, you know, what was his style and all that other kind of stuff, which I think I found that is equally fascinating as any of the other, you know, two parts of it. So an aha moment for me, and I was just meeting with friends and I was telling them I was so taken by Pope Leo XIII. I found him just to be an incredible Pope and, you know, a little bit mystery to me why he's not more, why he isn't a saint, and why he's not more well known. So that and the encyclical that he wrote, and Matthew, you can maybe correct me on this. Is it Arcanum?
Yes, Arcanum.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Arcanum, okay. Well, I mean, that was really the beginning of the church's, you know, written teaching, modern teaching on marriage and family and life and sex and, you know, that type of thing. And I found him so interesting because he had his finger on the pulse of what was happening in the culture at that time during the Industrial Revolution and the beginnings, really, of socialism or Marxism, if you will. And what I then, you know, found through every single document that I wrote about and every single pope who wrote them is that every single one of them had their fingers on the pulse. I mean, they, for anyone who would think that the church and the culture are separate, would be thinking very incorrectly because they are really one.
Absolutely.
And, but, I would actually say that the church seems to be always ahead of the culture. I mean,
prophetic.
That's what I found prophetic. I mean, in a very prophetic way. And then everything, you know, seems to play out even as they warned. If people wouldn't turn back to God, they made such perfect, exact warnings of what would happen.
Right.
And another thing I found that was so beautiful is the love that came through these documents and the love that these men had for their flock. I found the whole thing just beautiful, quite frankly.
One of the things that jumped out.
And I write clear up to Pope Francis. Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say that one of the things that jumps out at me as I'm reading through your great book, I really highly recommend this book to anybody, is the way that you beautifully thread everything together in terms of the, especially the recent papal magisterium on the topic of marriage and sexuality. You tie, for example, Leo XIII to Pius XI's Casti Canubi, and then you tie it to Humani Vitae. So you see this line, a very clear line of continuity in church teaching, which is often forgotten as though Humani Vitae just popped up out of nowhere.
Right, and that's what I think that was one of the things that intrigued me in the first place, because through Endow, I had taught many classes on Humani Vitae, and I knew that it was, for some people, it was a very hard teaching. And at the same time, I always felt that the people who studied it gained so much from it, and some completely changed their lives because of it. But still, it remains this hot-button teaching. And it's still today. I mean, I had some friends over for lunch, and we were talking about it, and we remarked, like, this must have been how they talked 50 years ago about this document. So it's just fascinating, like, what is it? And if you look at the whole story, quite frankly, it shouldn't have been, you know, the shock of the century. I can only think that it was because of the time that Pope Paul VI took to write the document. He took, you know, over 2 years. And during that time, there was a lot of festering going on. And the world was changing in such a way that all the expectation would be that the church would change with it. It's the only thing I can think that would make them, or the world, take note and be shocked and rebel and, openly split the church and the whole thing. Because the other documents do exactly the same thing. I mean, right. They write about it almost exactly in the same way.
Well, I would add a couple things also changed, you know, in those 2 years that we had modern means of media and communication. So those who wanted to believe that he would change teaching were able to suggest such through communications, and so it just spread. Their expectations of change spread in those 2 years that you spoke of. So I think you're right that that timing was really difficult. But I do want to turn, Terry, to your column that you wrote for the Register. It was beautifully written, and when you sent it to me, this was the title, Warning, Humani Vitae Can Change Your Life. And I just...
Exactly.
So how did it change yours?
Changed my life.
How did it change yours?
Well, it changed my life entirely. I mean, that's why this document speaks to me so much, and I have a continual interest in it, quite frankly, because I had never left the church. I had never... I never even felt as if I rebelled against the church, but I also didn't know the church. I had no idea. I'm raised Catholic. I was born and raised Catholic and went to Catholic school, but I don't know how it all missed me. And quite frankly, I knew that the church taught against contraception, but it was one of those things I could conveniently set aside. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I came upon Humani Vitae, I came up to it really through theology of the body. So that was a good intro. And then it was only into maybe 3 or 4 classes that the woman who was teaching the class brought up Humani Vitae. And I was falling so in love with theology of the body. And then when she brought up the church's teachings on contraception, I was almost like, you gotta be kidding me. I cannot believe that. And so it was a shock. Because I was changing so much from the teachings, and it just seemed like a period of time that God was pouring grace on me. But this was something that I initially rejected for no other reason than I didn't know anything about it. And because it had a bad reputation, if you will, or people didn't speak favorably about it. Well, anyway, then one thing led to another, and in the class we read the document. And what it meant for me, and I think this is why I feel that it has changed my life so much, it didn't mean for me that my husband and I were going to have 8 more children. You know, we were older when we married, that type of thing. What it meant for me is that I would have to trust God with everything.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to trust him. You know, he was asking us to trust him with, you know, the basic decisions in our marriage, our children, our lives together. We could not no longer control that, but it was much bigger for me. I couldn't control, and I couldn't, but I thought I could control anything. You know, and that's really been my walk of faith, is that constantly to remind myself that I can do what I can, but only God is the leader of my life, you know.
Absolutely.
And I, all that stems really to me from that document. I mean, is that, will I trust him or not? It was as simple as that. Am I going to make that change or not?
Absolutely. And you write about that, saying that this is within the pages of Humanae Vitae lie our entire spiritual journey. And that's it. That's what you're talking about right there, is the question of, can we trust God with our lives? It's really,
right.
It's beautifully written.
Right.
Your piece is beautifully written and so sincere. And I love also that it talks about the other women who, through Endow and through reading Theology of the Body and Humanae Vitae, were also touched and changed their lives. I was on the board of Endow for many years, and so I also witnessed the same transformation that occurred. And Terry, I just want to thank you on air for the yes that you said when you started to read this document, and you started to realize, something's got to change. And you changed it. It might have taken time, but you changed it. And I think that gives us courage, and it gives other people courage. So I just want to thank you for sharing that story with our readers in the pages of the Register. It's in our June 22nd edition, and it will be online in the coming weeks as we celebrate the Humanae Vitae anniversary. 50 years ago is when it was written. So, Terry, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
God bless.
And of course, look for Terry's book. It's called Life and Love, Opening Your Hearts to God's Design. It's published by our Sunday Visitor. And remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Also go to our podcast that's on that website, and you can listen to this show and many more. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Michael Birchfield, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.